It's been more than a decade since the September 11th attacks. The question is whether we're on this pendulum and we're swinging, we're going to swing back towards some sort of semblance of sanity when it comes to civil liberties.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Ryan Devereaux of TheIntercept.com. He and Jeremy Scahill have just published a fantastic and deeply disturbing article about a watchlisting guidance document. This is a 166-page document published last year by the government that talks about how do they figure out who is a suspected or known terrorist. There are 19 agencies that this document apparently goes out to. How did you come across this document, and how did you decide to bring it to light?
Through our sort of conversations with the government, we are 100% convinced of the authenticity of the document published by the National Counterterrorism Center, which is responsible for sort of consolidating right. the nation's terrorism information.
And this is for domestic as well as foreign. What types of people end up being watchlisted and then put on either a suspected or a known terrorist list?
The Muslim communities of the United States have really borne the brunt of these sorts of initiatives. So. Oftentimes, more often than not, those are the kinds of folks that are targeted. The way this guidance is written, though, it's broad enough that wide categories of people, dissidents, protesters, activists, all could be caught up in this system. The no-fly list in 2006 under Bush, it had peaked to about 44,000 people. And the following year, Department of Justice Inspector General issued this scathing report, and the government began cutting down the no-fly list.
And this meant these were 44,000 people. When they showed up at an airport, they're not getting on a plane.
Exactly. Into or out, right. out of the United States. 2009, that list had actually been pared down to about 4,000 people, according to New York Times reporting. But then December 25th, Nigerian man, Marfarouk Abdulmutallab, the underwear bomber, got on a plane to Detroit, nearly succeeded in detonating a bomb in his underwear, which sort of triggered the guidance that we published. Obama put all of this pressure on the watchlisting community to start ramping up their collection of information. He loosened the standards, loosened the rules and the criteria for bringing people onto the list, because the watchlisting community was complaining that, we couldn't put Abdulmutallab on the no-fly list because of the restrictions that are in place.
Right.
So Obama loosened those criteria. So,
and one of the most striking quotes that you guys highlight in your article at The Intercept, concrete facts are not necessary. So what does that mean?
The whole sort of watchlisting structure turns on reasonable suspicion. And as I'm sure you know, reasonable suspicion is a sort of highly controversial standard that comes up in lots of issues surrounding policing, stop and frisk, and that sort of thing. So this low standard is what is necessary to, an analyst needs to have reasonable suspicion that a person is engaged in this broad range of terrorist activity or associated with somebody who might be engaged in that sort of thing. Because also, we have to keep in mind that we're talking about known or suspected terrorists.
Right.
So these are people who are essentially, the way this document structures it, are people who are suspected of being suspects.
Talk a little bit about how you get off of whether it's the no-fly list or these suspect lists, because the article goes into that. Is it an easy process or is it at all a clear process?
It's completely an unclear process. It's all done internally. Basically, if you believe that you're on a list, you can submit a form through the Department of Homeland Security, and it all goes on internally. And you're never informed, even if they take you off, they never tell you that they took you off. They never tell you in the first place
on.
If you say that you're on. You never know. So they have these things called nominations, right? A nomination is sort of how you get on one of the lists. And the agency that is responsible for that is the nominating agency. Let's say it's the FBI. The FBI nominates you to be on a list. Now you have and it's accepted. Now you have a file with your information. If another agency, say the CIA, finds more information about you, they can update your file, right? But now they are also a nominating agency with a link to your record. If the FBI decides, hey, we should take this guy off the list, then they put in that request, but CIA has to agree with them. So when these agencies start sharing information on individual people, they all have a responsibility for that file. So all of these agencies now have to agree with one another.
With the Snowden revelations and then reporting before that, I mean, basically what's happened is that every kind of paranoia fantasy has come true. That, the government really is doing sorts of things with supercomputers that we did not really think it was doing or were possible. Is exposure in the press enough to actually turn back any of this kind of stuff? Or is it that this is just going to be the new future where the government is constantly surveilling us and we just learn to live with it and work around it?
That's the question that we're facing right now. It's been more than a decade since the September 11th attacks. But the question is whether we're on this pendulum and we're going to swing back towards some sort of semblance of sanity when it comes to civil liberties. And I don't know. We might still be swinging away from it. If you look at, you know, some of the extensions of Bush-era programs and initiatives under Obama, you get the sense that maybe we're not.
Yeah, so it's not a pendulum. It's just the ball is just heading out of the park.
Yeah, it could be. But then again, you know, over the last year with the Snowden revelations, I think that there is reason to believe that the tide might be changing.
The government is taking in so much data that it actually really can't find the people it's looking for. And is that a place where there might be resistance from within the intelligence agency to reverse some of these policies?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point and one that gets overlooked often because when we talk about things like the watch list, the no-fly list, you know, you can obviously make the civil liberties argument and many people do and they should, but there's also an efficacy argument to be made. And for years and years, this system has been criticized from within, internally. In 2012, the GAO issued this report based on interviews with people from the watchlisting community. These are intelligence officials, counterterrorism officials who are saying, we're drowning in information here. This is making it harder for us to do our job. It's ridiculous. And it's policy driven. It's not about doing actual investigations. It's about looking like you're doing something.
So there's security theater within the intelligence community as well as projected outward onto citizens.
Exactly.
Well, we'll leave it there. I want to thank Ryan Devereaux, who along with Jeremy Scahill at TheIntercept.com published an absolute must-read story about a watch list and guidance document from the government that explains who gets on watch lists and why. Ryan, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.